Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, lots of action down in the Bahamas. What's usually a quiet time in the golf year has a lot of Tiger news and updates, plus an interesting finish with the PGA Tour stars playing in Paradise. Also, what we're tuned into includes Christmas specials and a classic game that we all know and love, brought to the new age indeed. This week's guest, a master golf instructor, Eric Cogorno, answering all those super popular questions that come up on the golf course. We bring some real knowledge to the table, plus our college football playoff thoughts, a random accent out of nowhere, and we always end with food, and all of it is brought to you by our friends at Club Doctor Golf. Mike just went to the range last week, of course, and brought the Club Doctor spray with me. It's the number one golf club care solution, and they've got two great products that can keep your club squeaky clean. They've got the wonderful solution, keeps them clean on the course. The polishing solution restores that original shine for a more thorough clean of the dirt, grass, grime that sticks to your clubs. Clean clubs are known to improve your club performance, ball spin, speed control, you know the whole thing. It just gives you a little bit better feel and attitude towards each shot and swing you make. So be sure to bring your clubs back to life and restore your original shine with Club Doctor, either the cleaning solution or the polish. Great portable solutions you need on the course. Check out clubdoctorgolf.com. Use promo code COL. That's promo code COL for 15% off any purchase. And I'll say it right now. I know we're talking about holiday shopping. Mike, if you order this week, right now, as you're listening right now, you can still get Club Doctor in time for Christmas. Love it. So it's a great stocking stuffer. Check out clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Potosi Snacks, and Club Doctor Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, did you know that this weekend it was actually 2011? Tiger Woods was wearing his Sunday red and bombing drives on the driving range. It was just like we were back in the day at the World Hero Challenge, Hero World Challenge, or whatever we call it there, and Tiger hosted and playing. Oh, wait, he didn't actually play, but it felt like he was, because the attention was all on Tiger, because he had his big press conference where he talked about playing, and there's all this debate going around whether he's going to be in the father-son tournament, and he's out there with driver, just bombing it out there on the course. I mean, this guy almost had his leg amputated 9 months ago, and here he is, bombing driver. I just can't with him. He's got to be a robot. He's got to be.
Very strange set of headlines this week from a tournament where, you're right, Tiger was not even playing. So for anyone who was just buried in football or the holiday season and didn't see any golf, Tiger hosts a tournament in the Bahamas every year, the Hero World Challenge. He decided to be down there for hosting duties, did a little Tuesday press conference in which we got a lot more from his recovery process. And then all of a sudden, as the week went on, Mike, we started seeing him post up in the back end of the driving range. He's inviting Bryson back there. He's inviting Brooksy back there to hit balls with him. Videos emerging. And Tiger Woods has gone from I'm starting to walk to I'm making full swings with a driver in seemingly weeks in front of the public eye. So that was the big development that we saw in Paradise last week.
I mean, this was just absolutely crazy. I mean, we've been saying it all along that if there's anyone who could come back from this kind of injury, it was going to be Tiger Woods. I did not think in any way, shape, or form that we'd be seeing him doing what he looks like he might be doing 9 months after that injury, when he said during his press conference, amputation was on the table.
Yeah, so 50-50, I mean, his leg being amputated. That's what makes that headline even more extraordinary.
Yeah, and it's just crazy to me. Now, my only concern, I'm going to dampen everyone's spirits here.
Yeah, you're here for that. That's okay. You be the wet blanket. I will be the fire starter. What do you got for me this week?
How buff did Tiger look to you? I mean, did he look just like Bryson DeChambeau buff up top there, right?
I think he work his lower body out, so it's just all arm exercises, right?
All arm and shoulder and upper body, and his legs looked like little twigs. So my concern is when he's in odd shots, when he's got like a lot of angle going on, or he's got to get down low in a bunker or hit something really interesting, he needs a lot of leg strength, which we know he's always had and what has really helped him. I don't think he has that right now.
Yeah, so that's a fair statement.
That's what's going to take forever to come back for him.
Right now, Tiger practicing at his home course and hitting driver to spots in the fairway he knows like the back of his hand, and hitting seven irons and wedges out of the fairway to green. Yeah, that's nice, and that's great to see that he's able to go play the holes and rounds and be on the course again. That's amazing. But you're right. It's the tournament situation. It's the when you stop playing for fun with your friends and you really got to play the ball everywhere and hit it out of the woods and the plug lie in the bunker and the side hill lie in the rough. Those are things that are going to test his true recovery timeline. So with that being said, in the timeline we're talking, we thought it was somewhere out next year, and it probably could be in terms of actual PGA Tour golf. The current debate right now, Mike, is we've got the PNC Father-Son Challenge next weekend in Florida. He had an amazing week there with Charlie last year. Now, in a father-son dynamic, Charlie is ripping at his dad's shirt to get him to be in that tournament. Apparently, there's a spot open for him. What do we think about him potentially playing in this tournament, even if it is in somewhat of a limited capacity?
Well, here's what I'll say. And I saw this on Twitter that someone said that, they would let Tiger Woods play in this tournament if he only played every other hole in the back nine and drove a Ferrari in between his shots out there on the fairway.
Tire marks and all. They're okay with him making tire marks. It's fine. Yeah.
It's Tiger fucking Woods. You're going to let him play if he wants to play. No matter what you need to do, what worlds you need to move to make it happen, and let him play. Will he play with Charlie? I don't know if I'm ready to pull the trigger on saying yes. I feel like the answer is yes to that question. I also feel like he's not going to worry about hitting it real well because Charlie's the one who's going to win the tournament for them.
Yeah, they're going to take most of his drives, I think, because Charlie hits it so far and he's playing from the kids' tees. So, I don't think Tiger has to maybe rip the driver 14 times. I think he may not even tee off on half the holes. And he's just hitting from the fairway, where the best ball is, and chips and putts. It's possible. I will get the headline by the end of this week, and by next week's episode, we'll figure out exactly what the immediate future looks like for him. But stunning developments there. And oh, by the way, there was also a golf tournament with the world's best playing as well too.
There was, and the real headline to me out of this week was what happened Sunday with Jordan Spieth and Henrik Stenson on the 19th.
Yes,
I think that is just hilarious to me what happened there.
Two of the greatest golfers in the world were playing in a tournament together in a real professional round.
Charity tournament.
Yes, they both managed to tee off from they played the incorrect hole, essentially. There was a tee box that looked like it was supposed to be the one where they were teeing off. They played at it all week and were just going through the motions. And lo and behold, they quite literally hit from the wrong tee in an actual event. Wow.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Henrik Stenson in the press conference after the round was like, we went up to the tee box that we've been playing at every day this week, and we hit our drives, and then we were told, two stroke penalty. And now when you look at them, it looks like that's probably their tee box. When they flip the camera around, you see that there's a giant sign behind the tee box that says a different hole number. So, and they supposedly said that this was going to happen in the clubhouse. So my question is, who's at fault here? The players, the caddies, or the course?
That order right there. I'm not blaming the course for this. The signs are massive on every tee box. You see exactly what hole it is. It's a giant number that shows you what hole number you're on. So players first, you're right. And then, the caddies got to be looking at some point. I'm telling you, Mike, this was first group out Sunday morning. These guys have been in the Bahamas all week, and they're in last place in a tournament with guaranteed money. I'm going to take a wild guess and say maybe these guys had an enjoyable Saturday night, and we're still maybe a little bit out of it. Sunday morning when they strolled up to the wrong tee box, they had to bend to make that type of mistake.
Yeah, that's true. the other, of course, big headline in here is that Colin Morikawa had a big chance to claim number one in the world this week and didn't.
Yeah, on top of a massive week that started with him popping the question to his girlfriend. Yeah. So number one in his fiance's heart now, officially with the ring, as if he wasn't already. And he was trying to get that number one ranking and was up five shots. Good call, Morikawa, up five shots. Like, that's really the Yeah. That's the double headline is, yes, Victor Hovland went and got this victory in impressive fashion, but Colin Morikawa blowing a 5-shot lead. Wow. Did not see that coming.
That's kind of disappointing to see. I wouldn't read too much into this. Again, it's a charity tournament. It had number one world ranking on the line for him. But you also got to understand that you put Victor Hovland in a course in the Bahamas or the Caribbean or anywhere where it's a resort, and he's automatic. That's the only place he seems to like to win right now. I don't know what it is. It's something about he's going from the Netherlands to paradise, and he just loves it, and he just plays really well. I don't know what it is.
Is he just a big pool bar guy? Does he need to be at a resort to play his best golf? Is that the deal?
I don't know what it is, but one way or the other, he notched his fourth victory on tour. Is he going to win? I mean, when is Victor Hovland going to win a major? He keeps biting at the bit here. So
yeah, I mean, he's right there. You know, if you look back at the odds when he gets picked, he's in the 30-41 odds to win a major championship any given time of the year. So he's on that short list, maybe 15-20 guys that haven't got one that need to get one done here soon. So the expectations are nothing but pointing up for him. Impressive stuff from Victor.
So that was all the fun happening in Paradise. Of course, there also was the Euro Tour with nobody there to watch.
Oh, very different optics on the DP World Tour. Sorry. I keep typing Euro Tour, the DP World Tour. South African Open. We said all the controversy last week in the Joburg Open with everyone fleeing South Africa with everything going on. Well, a lot of the South African golfers, they stayed put in their homeland. The South African Open still happened, but because of everything going on, there was not a fan in sight there. So we were back to the 2020 COVID vibes, Mike. Remember the empty courses? And you could hear all the bees and the bugs all day long in the background. It was definitely an interesting sight, and it reminded me of those days of last year watching in the mornings.
Was indeed. Let's turn our attention on what's going on this weekend. It is the QBE Shootout. It's team golf. It's what we love to see every year. It's walk-up music, right? Walk-up music.
You know what? They should be doing this for the QBE. That's the Zurich where they do the walk-up music. But they should do this for the... That's actually a great idea, because this is as silly season as it gets right now. This is beyond the last actual event. Like, if you even call the hero that, this is silly season in Naples, Florida. It's 12 two-person teams. I took a quick look at the field. It's sneaky good, by the way, for a mid-December event where all these guys have supposedly packed it in. A lot of good two-man teams out there. I see, obviously, Cooch and Harris Ingles defending. How about Sam Burns and Billy Horschel as maybe a pick? I'm not throwing any money on this, but that's a team you might want to look at to win this week. Those are a couple guys who have good 2021 campaigns that could get it done this week.
I mean, I really think the team we need to be watching is Bubba Watson and Lexi Thompson, because that's going to be electric.
Good electricity and a lot of bomb tee shots there from those two. So it's the QBE Shootout, the final, and I mean it for real. This is really the final tournament. This is it. There's nothing else coming after this. Yes, the fathers and the sons will tee it up next weekend, and we'll see if Tiger's part of that. But the QBE Shootout from Naples should be another fun palm tree watch for the golf fans out there.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Alex, I had a little birthday money sitting around, burning a hole in my pocket. So I decided to go out there and buy PGA Tour 2K21.
Look at us making video game purchases, huh?
No. I've played a couple rounds, and it is awfully realistic, and it is a tad bit difficult, and it feels a lot like you're playing around a golf.
Did you play as a pro or create your own character yet?
So I created my own player, and
I started from two. Oh, wow. Jeez. Okay.
You're really late on golf score, right? Lower is better. Golf score, lower is better.
Right.
I started with Q School, so I'm actually at Q School Finals.
Ooh, right now. Like that. Shout out to our brethren and friends of the show who battled through Q School.
That said, I have a 5-stroke lead right now. So.
Okay. So you're looking at full status then. Congrats. Yeah.
The one thing I'm missing, though, as you would agree with this, because we all remember our time playing a Tiger Woods PGA Tour.
What was that? Maybe 04, 05 was our game?
It's even lighter than that, I feel like.
Yeah.
When you got in those big moments, the controller would vibrate for you and you get kind of a heartbeat feel. I don't have that going on right now. I don't know if maybe this is I'm not there yet in the game, but I do miss that feeling to let you know just how big this putt might be, or you go into like cinematic mode when you sink a 30-foot putt or something, or you hole out from the fairway. Like, I want that. I miss
that. The heartbeat mode. I don't know. Did we have like too many kids had like hand tremors or carpal tunnel as a result of the heartbeat vibration or something? Was that too intense for us? I think
getting carpal tunnel from playing video games, it wasn't from PGA Tour games.
those tournaments can be long if you invest in a full season.
That's true. But it can be four rounds. That's a lot of golf to play. Let me tell you. I'm curious to hear
how your rookie campaign goes out on tour.
We'll keep us updated. We'll update.
Nice. I was tuned into some obviously holiday specials that are just pouring and oozing out of every TV and streaming service right now. Everyone's got holiday specials coming out left and right. I typically appreciate the musical ones, though. I got to give a shout out to Kelly Clarkson because she's just got a phenomenal voice and she crushed her special too, Mike. Not only does she bring in guests to sing, but I love it when she just does kind of her own karaoke of Christmas classics. And I also got to see the boy band Holiday as well, too. Talking NSYNC, O-Town duets, Boys to Men, all the classics that the 90s kids love. So it's good to see our favorites from our younger years belting out the holiday tunes and got me all warmed up for the holiday season.
Now, were you an NSYNC guy? Were you Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees,
New Kids on the Block? I think my allegiance was officially Backstreet, even though I loved them all. NSYNC was the only one I didn't see live. Seen Backstreet, seen 98 Degrees, seen O-Town. So that's the only one I haven't really checked off. So Justin Timberlake, I've been waiting on the reunion for a while. He seems a little too busy with other things to get this going. But hopefully one day I can check that off my bucket list.
He's just too much of a big news for himself to kind of go back to NSYNC, which is...
I know the other four are waiting. They're ready to go at a moment's notice, yeah.
Do you think we can get a Mickey Mouse Club reunion?
Yes. Shout out to Freed Britney as well, too. Bring her back in the fold. Yes.
Right.
Love that.
Let's get into this week's guest. It's end of the year and golf off season for many, but we've got a world-class instructor in Eric Cagarno joining us with the thoughts of the golf swing and some refreshingly easy tips for your game.
Yeah, definitely. Because honestly, and I touched on this in the beginning, it's just like... sometimes you get online, you're looking for coaching advice, and it is just too complicated. So I appreciate the simple stuff, and that's what Eric does really, really well. And I know you're going to appreciate this conversation and all the golfers out there, because we're not getting technical at all. I ask questions like, should we be taking practice swings on the tee, Mike? You know, just the things that come up every day on the golf course. You know, if I'm not hitting it well, should I just keep hitting it the same way and adjust, or try something new? These are the things we float around on the golf course a lot, and Eric has some great answers to all those questions.
Can't wait to hear it all. But first, I want to let you know this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. Alex, it's really almost the second week of December now. Hanukkah's over, so if you haven't gotten someone a Hanukkah gift, you kind of missed that boat. That one's gone. But this is really kind of your last chance to get someone a Christmas gift. And you know that the Phone Caddy is what you need to get all the golfers in your life, because Absolutely. It's going to keep that phone safe. Phone won't be sitting on the golf cart next to you on the ground as you drive away from it, or sitting with all the towels and trash kind of underneath the wheel there.
How about the water spilling over in the video I shared this week on our Instagram too? You never know, because the water on those drinks, it overflows. You're playing on a warm day, the ice melts, all of a sudden you got more water in your cup you need to, and then it spills over your phone. The Phone Caddy just does not allow that to happen.
Yeah. So instead of getting all the golfers in your life more golf balls or tees or, I don't know, another towel for their bag, you got to get them the Desert Fox Phone Caddy. It's going to hold their phone safe. It comes in a huge array of colors, even something from their patriotic line. And all the golfers in your life are going to love you. And not only that, you're going to love yourself, because you can save 10% when you use a promo code Course of Life. So maybe you can get yourself a Phone Caddy as well. So all you need to do is head on over to Desert Fox's website. That's desertfoxgolf.com. Use the promo code Course of Life to save 10%. Again, that's promo code Course of Life at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up on the tee, originally from Pennsylvania, now based in sunny Florida for the winter, he's talking golf, teaching it, and showing the game to us in a really simplistic, concise way, which I love. We've got Eric Cagarno joining us on the Course of Life. Eric, how's everything down in Florida? All right.
Alex, thanks for having me, man. Everything is beautiful. Unlike the Pennsylvania weather where I grew up, it's like 80 and sunny, no rain here every day during the winter. So life is good, man.
Yep, that's the way it needs to be. I grew up in the Northeast too. I got down to Texas as soon as I could, and it's just 75 degrees here myself. So we're enjoying the warmth, but let's pay a quick tribute to our friends who are in the cold. We grew up in that colder weather atmosphere. I'm curious what your memories are of playing, you know, golf in the winter and that the cruddy weather, kind of muddy, you know, cold wind golf that you remember your younger years. It's something I embrace every once in a while, but I certainly don't miss it on my end.
Yeah. You know, I think back in the day when, especially when I was a complete golf addict, you know, growing up, let's say in like late middle school, high school, college years, you know, if there was no snow on the ground, we golfed. So, you know, I think of the mornings where you go to the course, there's a frost delay, you know, you have to wait in the shop for like an hour before you can even tee off. The place that I grew up playing, Bethlehem Municipal, is a muni track. So super, super firm, like all the time either way. So during the winter time, you know, you're hitting the green, the ball is bouncing 12 feet in the air.
Yes.
But, you know, at that time of year, man, you know, I'm watching golf on TV 24/7, just thrilled to be out playing. And I remember that phase too, lots of garage swings during the winter for me. You know, I would buy every training aid. I remember having the old Medicus out there, 100 swings a day type of thing. So I'm happy those days are gone.
Yeah, definitely. I don't miss hitting balls with a lower flighted swing in a garage as it snowed in the front yard. Certainly not in my repertoire anymore. The Texas golf is great here. But one thing I love that you do, not only with the training aids and all the content you put out, is before we get to what you talk about in the swing, just talk to me about kind of creating concise content. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on here, is there's a lot of over information right now, especially in golf instruction. I appreciate the way you kind of really break things down to their bare bones and make it easy for everyone to understand. Did that come naturally for you as you were teaching, or is that taking some time as a skill to build?
Yeah, thanks, man. I think honestly, it came pretty naturally. You know, I started teaching lessons when I was 18. So I started very young, and I think my ability to communicate was sort of a natural thing. But in the beginning, as I was learning how to coach, I spent a lot of time learning and studying communication and NLP and, you know, Tony Robbins stuff. And part of it, I think, in my communication and trying to make things as simple as possible was me learning it that way as well, like only being able to communicate what I understood at the time. And I found in the lessons, anytime I gave a bad lesson, Alex, it was always because I gave too much info. Like almost across the board, it's like, all right, that person didn't get better. I gave him seven things. You know, I gave him the book. And I realized the best lessons I gave are when I gave really one thing, you know, or the least amount of info. And at that time, I was going around shadowing a lot of coaches. And I noticed the same trend. It was like all of the top 100 or the best of the best I watched, I was almost... like, I thought I was going to go and it's going to be like a magic show. Like, they were going to do these things I never saw. It was unbelievable. But the reality is, the better the coach, the more basic it was. It was simple. It was one or two things. It was very easy to digest. And so I think that had a big impact on me. And naturally, in, I guess, 2017, we started shifting things online. I think because I had been coaching for, you know, 10, 12 years beforehand, trying to communicate that same way, fortunately, I think that you know, we've done a nice job with keeping that within the videos as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate the way you broke that down, because oftentimes as a student and seeing people who come from a great lesson, they usually don't read you the book either. They're just telling you one or two simple things that their coach told them to do that blew their mind and had them start hitting the ball great. So that art of keeping it concise definitely worn well for your content as well, too. It says on your website, Eric, you did 20,000 lessons. And I don't know if those are all before you even got to YouTube and Instagram, which is where a lot of people know you now. But I'm curious, you know, throughout those lessons that you've took, you've seen the full gamut of golfers and golf swings. What are kind of your biggest takeaways from all the lessons you've done in person and how that, you know, molds your content and the videos you put out today?
Yeah, I think that, so I started when I was 18. I'm going to be 33 in a couple of weeks. So 15 years, you know, you figure 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 lessons per year. I'm sure like a lot of industries, you see a lot of the same things. Like I probably could record 10 good videos and kind of rinse and repeat those same concepts. That's one thing that I've learned, right, is that the quote unquote fundamental pieces are fundamentals for a reason. The other thing that I think one of the things that as I coach more is like it's really, 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 really important to get to root causes. So, you know, in the beginning of coaching, I think a lot of coaches see a bad impact look or see a thing that's really a result of something that happened poorly earlier on. And so learning what are the root issues and how to fix those, you know, the old find the biggest one or two things where you could fix 8 flaws in one. I think that has played out very true. But I listen, the same things like 10 years ago, today, 10 years from now, if I go to a driving range, guess what I'm going to see? I'm going to see grips that are too weak in the palm, club faces that are open, pass that are too far left, weight too far back. So that won't ever change in terms of like the majority of the issues. Hopefully, with all of us, we're like putting a dent in that. But yeah, it's a lot of the same stuff over time.
Yeah, we're putting a dent in it though, for sure. I appreciate the way you phrase that. Let's talk about kind of the different moments in the swing and what everyone wants to get to, the popular golf topics when it comes to teaching. You know, the little chatter you hear on the range. We've got a world-class instructor here with us. So let's see where you stand and give a little credence to these popular topics. The first thing I want to start off with is before the actual swing happens. Practice swings and the idea of taking practice swings as part of your pre-shot routine. I've heard so many conflicting things about, you know, you should take practice swings. You shouldn't take practice swings because it doesn't emulate the real thing. Do you have a specific stance there? And what are your thoughts when you hear a lot of that conversation surrounding practice swings as a pre-shot routine?
Yeah. So I think there's two parts to that. Number one would be, practice swings and their effect on your actual swing in terms of like swing mechanics and improving your swing on the range. And then there's practice swings and their effect of your performance when you're out golfing. So practice swings and their effect on your performance when you're out golfing would fall into a category that I would call priming. And that's let's just say a psychological term, similar to someone who would go on stage and they would prime their bodies to change their mental state before they would go perform, right? Routines of athletes before they would go into a game. You can prime your brain to perform better by performing the same tasks in the same order and the same movement. So there's a lot of value to that. I like to see 2 practice swings behind the golf ball. Whatever you're working on, I would prefer to have 1 big picture thought. So for example, my current swing thought is get my hands all the way up and back behind my right shoulder and then all the way up and through over my left shoulder. So some kind of big basic thought. And then you're getting very present in your moment, right? So like aware of your senses, seeing, breathing, smelling, feeling, visualization, et cetera. So there's a lot of value to that, a lot of research behind that. Now on the flip side, the practice swings like, hey, Eric, I do this practice swing next to the ball, my swing's perfect, but then I do it with the ball and everything goes wrong. What the
yes,
heck?
Yes, classic.
Yeah. And listen, the solution there is your practicing without the ball is worthless. It's like me doing a speech on a stage in front of 10,000 people. And I'm like, well, what the heck? I did a speech in the mirror to myself and it went great. And then I went on stage, 10,000 people. It didn't go as good. What happened? Well, your speech in front of the mirror, it was nothing like the 10,000, right? In your practice swing, your brain has no sense of a negative consequence. 0. When you put a ball down there, your brain's trying to find a solution to make you hit it good. Like a swing fault inherently is your brain trying to help you out, right? Like that's what it is, trying to hit the ball well. So my motto, like we do a lot of online coaching at CoconutGolf.com is like, listen, get rid of the practice swings. Make every swing in your practice with a golf ball. Now you need feedback though, right? We're not going to just hit and swing and adjust. Nope. We're using video, we're using training stations, et cetera. So the answer, my opinion on the answer to that question is priming for performance practice swings on the golf course, super important, in practice next to irrelevant.
Okay. Noted. I like that. It's a good way to think about things. You did tease the next question I wanted to ask, which is, it sounds like you've got kind of one central thought going on with your swing currently. You hear it all the time when people are on the course struggling. They say, I've got too many things going through my head. What is that number? It sounds like you might be telling me one thought for the swing, but how many is too many, I guess? And what is the level of information that golfers should have when they're going into a swing?
Yeah, it's funny. I listened to something from Sir Nick Faldo not long ago, who was talking about having like 3, 4, 5 swing thoughts. And he won 6 majors. That sort of throws out the simple is better concept. No, I think for the majority of golfers, what you're looking to do is analyze and have multiple, like in your practice, be analytical and specific in working on whatever you're working on. But then when you're performing, you need to take a thought and turn it into a feel that produces a ball flight. So whatever, let's say someone's working on their takeaway and they're like, all right, I'm feeling my left wrist do this, my right arm do this, yada, whatever. You need to take those thoughts and turn it into some sense of a feel, preferably external, like the club is moving this way type of thing. And that feel needs to produce a predictable outcome. So if someone fades it, let's say every time, it's like, hey, I'm going to do this takeaway feel and have the ball fade less or whatever it is. I'm just making something up. Yeah. So I like that thought into a feel that produces a predictable outcome. Predictable.
That's good. Flight. Yeah. That's a little bit more concise. Again, getting back to that keyword for us to wrap our brain around thoughts, turn them into feelings, and then they don't have to be a whole bunch of thoughts when you get up on the tee. That I like that thought. Let's talk about speed of the swing, because I hear a lot that, you know, maybe the best swing isn't done with 100% of the power or force that you put into the ball. Do you have kind of a certain percentage in mind that you like to tell golfers, say, swing at 80%, 70, or is it go at with 100% of what you have? Where do you lie on that? You know, how hard should I be swinging question?
Yeah, I think 80% is good. 80% is kind of a cliche answer. Usually cliches are cliches for a reason. I think, you know, for a driver, the goal would be to hit it as far as possible with a predictable ball flight. With an iron, the goal is to hit it a specific distance with a predictable ball flight. So inherently two different objectives there. So if you were going to ramp up the speed closer to 100%, I would be okay with that more so with the driver when you're trying to max that out, given, you know, the golfer can hit it somewhere near the middle of the face and they can have one predictable curve that they can hit over and over and over. With the irons, I think that 80% is definitely more you're living there, because if the iron doesn't go as far as you want, that's a mechanical issue on your end, and or like you can always just take more club. Like you can't take more club than driver, right? So driver, you need to learn how to max that out. With the irons, you could take more clubs. So I think 80% is good. I usually run someone through a test if I'm with them. Would be, hey, let's say your 8 iron you take out, make a full swing, full length swing, but hit it at like 20% speed. So let's say the ball goes 50 yards, and then make a full length swing and go like 40% speed. Maybe it goes 80 yards, and work your way all the way up to into 100. And at some point from that first swing to your 100% swing, you'll find an area that feels like it's reasonably under control. And that's probably what someone should play with at that given moment.
Definitely. That's good observation. I can tell you definitely as you work the clubs down to those wedges, I've had some moments where I could just hit a nice 80% wedge, but if I'm trying to step on a 100% sand wedge, those end up going pretty sideways sometimes. So that is a good hint as the clubs go down there. One other golf swing related thing I want to touch on with Eric Cogorno here, CogornoGolf.com, is swing adjustments in round. Always a very, very dangerous science for us golfers out there on the course who are struggling mid round. Is it all about that classic saying, you know, dance with the girl that you brought, or are you allowed to try and change on the swing as things might be going wayward for you off the tee?
Yeah, my take on that from experience myself and working with players is the better the player, the better they're able to problem solve and adjust earlier in a round. So if I take a scratch handicap, right? Or like for me, for instance, let's say my ball flight, my misses would be a push and an overhook. I've got like 15 ways to fix that, right? I can open my club face at setup. I can swing more to the left past impact. I can increase body rotation, whatever, right? I have multiple arrows that I could do to fix it. All of those are in play. So I don't think you dance with what you got. I think that the higher the handicap player, A, doesn't know how to fix their problem. B, it takes too long to do it. So if you fix your problem on hole 14 and I fix mine on hole 3, right, I have a lot more holes with good golf. Now, you need to know how to fix those problems. You need to know what the problem is, right? And then you need to know how to fix those. What I like to do with someone is we do what's called grid. So if you and I are working together and we were working on your game, you went to the range, you'd always do a wedge warm-up distance control. So it's like a 2-for-1. As you're warming up, you might as well work on your distance control with your wedges, right? So
right.
30, 40, 50, whatever. Then you do a set of balls for mechanics practice, a set number of reps. No matter if you had a great session or a terrible session, you're doing 20 reps or 30, whatever number is. Then, huge key, and this is how you learn how to problem solve your swing and ball flight, is you do what's called a grid. So you think of a field goal post out on the range. You pick a target. Let's just say it's 30 feet wide. Start with your shortest club. Turn those thoughts into one feel. Take that one feel, hit one curve, make the ball land in that grid. Now, on Tuesday when you're doing that, your feel to make the ball land in that grid might be different than Thursday or Sunday or the next week. The key is you're not searching for one feel that lasts forever. That's impossible. It'll never happen. You're searching for multiple solutions to that problem you have. Hey, the ball's over fading. Here's 5 ways that the ball could fade less. Let's find the top 1 or 2. And then you can adjust within those multiple things. And then you adjust when you go play, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Now I think there could be details that are important there to answer that. But I think as a broad stroke answer that's what I've seen work well.
Definitely. Cause I know the classic saying is there's more than one way to get the ball in the hole. So there's more than one way to swing the club the way you need to for that day in that moment. So those reps help indeed. I want to connect on a mutual friend of ours because you've done a lot of great content. Again, it's Eric Cagorno, CagornoGolf.com. Check him out on Instagram as well too. I saw you got to connect with a buddy of mine who we've had on the show a couple of times. And I'm talking about long driver, Josh Koch. He's had a great run this year, obviously battled back from a lot of injury. And I saw you got to do some really cool content with him on the range. Talk to me about picking Josh's brain because he's a guy that definitely has a lot to offer with the way he swings the club.
Oh, and he's the best, man. I think we did a couple videos down here, a couple videos up in PA. What a unique opportunity, right? He's literally one of the longest drivers on the planet, and he's a world-class golf coach.
Yeah. Right?
So I think he's such a unique guy in that his ability to perform, and he's in the trenches of competing and going through the training himself, and also knows the technical details to be able to coach at a world-class rate. So I love hanging out with him. I always get some little nuggets from everyone. And man, I'd love to, if I could take a couple yards here and there from him, I'd be happy to have him.
I know, right? Is Josh selling like 20 or 30 yards? I'd love to buy. I mean, seriously, I think we all would. But yeah, he had an amazing run. It was cool to see him go toe-to-toe with Bryson and everything like that. Awesome stuff for long drive. All right, Eric, let's get to some quick shots now. It's CagornoGolf.com. Again, Eric Cagorno, CagornoGRNO on Instagram. Definitely check his content out. I'm curious, you've taught, you said 20,000 plus lessons and the number is much higher now. Any random celebrity or notable client in your history of teaching, or maybe someone out there who we'd be surprised to learn is a golfer that you've taught before?
I would say that I have the sort of most well-known people that I've coached have been athletes. I've had quite a few athletes that are currently in various leagues, quite a few retired former pro athletes, you know, NFL players, MLB, hockey, etc. I have 2 people in 2022 that I'm supposed to coach who are in the entertainment acting world that haven't come to fruition. If I end up doing that, I'll send you a message and share that next time I come on.
Exciting. I'm curious just for the athletes in general, what do you notice about maybe the current and former athletes when they get to the game? I see they have that just insatiable amount of competition to get better. But is there kind of a common thread between the athletes that you've coached and how they approach the game?
Yeah, I think there's huge advantages, right? Like just like if I were to coach someone who's been playing sports their whole life, huge advantage in terms of their learning curve versus someone who has not played sports. You know, a professional athlete has a couple things going for them. 1, they've got tremendous eye-hand coordination. 2, they're very quick learners. 3, they have great control of their bodies. And 4, they understand what it takes to get better, right? If I work with someone who's been golfing for a year or two, who maybe doesn't quite understand the work that goes in. I mean, a pro athlete's working on their sport from 8 a.m. till, you know, 8 p.m. So putting in the reps like that is easy. So that's always fun.
Nice. Love that. Let's go to a random one. How about favorite swings on tour, talking professional golfers, whether that's a PGA Tour or LPGA Tour? Who do you like watching swing the club most these days?
Nelly Korda, I think, is swings it mechanically about as good as you could possibly do. And a lot of our videos, you know, I'll use Adam Scott. I think he's a very nice vanilla model for someone to watch. Not that everyone could move the way he moves, but he does things very normally. Tommy Fleetwood's iron swing, I think, is really nice for a lot of people to copy. Grant Waite, Robert Rock. Those would be guys that I would use as models. Rory with the driver is freaking unbelievable.
That's a good mix of throwback names and new age names. I like that.
Yeah.
Grant Waite. Yeah. Haven't heard that name in a while. Good stuff. Yeah, awesome. Hey, Eric, we love to end our conversations with our 19th hole question. So I got to know, when you're done with the day, whether it's playing on the course or teaching, and you get into your favorite clubhouse, what's like your go-to order? What's like your meal and drink that you got to have after a long day on the course?
That's a good one. So like what I'd like it to be, like I'm a simple like burger and fries kind of guy. Yep. So if I was somewhere like a California cheeseburger, French fry thing would be easy for me. But I'm, as the years go on and I get older, man, you know, I got to eat, I got to watch what I eat and drink, and I don't wake up feeling the same way. So I'm probably rolling through somewhere getting like a Caesar salad and a water, as boring as it is. But old me would be like burger, fries, beer, like a Miller Lite type of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely the number one answer, the burger, fries, beer. But I will say a lot of people are reaching for that chicken Caesar wrap these days. So you're not alone in that as well. Love it. Awesome. Hey, Eric, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Really looking forward to more of your golf content, and keep teaching the world out there, because you're doing great stuff.
And we're back. Great chat there with Eric. You know, less is more, like he said, out there on the course. And I have to tell you that my brain is usually devoid of all and any thought when I hit the ball, other than maybe don't go in the water.
Oh, no. You said the don't, though. You know,
I know. But that's usually the thought in my head.
What could go wrong?
I know. I try to get up there and I'm like, I got to hit in the middle of the fairway. And it's
there
like,
it
I want to hit in the middle.
Stop sentence right there. I got to hit in the middle of the fairway.
I don't want to go OB. I don't want to go in the woods. I don't want to go over there. I don't want to go over there. So I'm going to hit it in the middle of the fairway. So,
all right. The first part's great. It's just the run-on sentence there. You need to get rid of those thoughts. Okay. One goal, one thought, one swing every time. Yeah, I appreciated the conciseness of Eric's tips there. Real practical stuff to take with you to the range and the course. And yeah, check out CognornoGolf.com. It's neat to see the stuff he's posting every day on Instagram as well.
And if you like that conversation, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, go ahead and give us a rating on the podcast app you're using right now. Hit the subscribe button. Share this episode with a friend. Let them know how they can improve their golf game, and what else they can learn from this conversation with Eric, plus everything else here. And you can let them use that, all those codes we have to save money on
this
everything
we offer.
It's
here. The season, no, the share time. Promo code Sharing. And save money on shopping. That's the reality of it. So.
And if you don't have friends to share with, then create a Twitter account and just blast it on Twitter, and we'll like that tweet. Tag us on Twitter.
You got two right here. If you're listening right now and you feel alone, right. you got us. Okay.
Yeah. We'll do it. I'm at MWRINC on Twitter. Alex is Course of Life
One
on Twitter.
Yeah.
And we're on Instagram, COL Podcast on Instagram.
Speaking of one, Alabama ranked number one in the college football poll heading into the playoff. Shocking revelation, isn't it?
Georgia just cannot win in Atlanta when they play at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Which is ironic because Georgia is Atlanta is in Georgia, from what I understand, right?
Supposedly.
Okay.
But
they got the door blown in that game. That was not pretty.
They really did. They really did.
But yeah, Bama's the number one seed, Mike. They play number four, Cincinnati. That could get ugly. Love them in that game. And number two, Michigan, going to play number three, Georgia. And those are going to be the two semifinal matchups in about 3.5 weeks now. We play through all the meaningless bowl games in the meantime. But I would say, you know, two normals, Bama and Georgia, obviously there. Good to see the fresh blood, Michigan and Cincinnati. I don't know if I really give either one of them a chance to win their games. Yeah. I'm probably not going to bet on them, unfortunately, but I do appreciate, this is what I've been hemming and hawing for 4 months, that we did get some fresh blood in the playoff, however good or bad they may be.
You know, they'll be there. They'll provide a split second of excitement, and then they'll quickly lose, and we'll move on to Bama and Georgia in the championship game.
Just like we all suspected. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
Let's also talk about Notre Dame, because they did not make this Final Four.
Number five.
Kelly said, bye-bye, guys, bye-bye. I love this family, bye-bye. And then he went to LSU, and he adopted a really horrible Southern accent. I'm not even going to try, because I'll do it worse than he did.
Unbelievably weird clip coming from Brian Kelly. Yep. He leaves Notre Dame, like you said. And Brian Kelly, this is an Irish Catholic guy that grew up in Massachusetts, yep. Okay? Mike, you and I know exactly what that sounds like. It doesn't sound too far from what I sound like right now, okay? Yep. So he leaves his family in Notre Dame, goes down to LSU in his introductory microphone moment at the LSU basketball game, throws on the biggest Southern accent you could ever imagine, talking about his family and how great it is to be in the great state of Louisiana. And it is just, it just reeks of pandering, and it's an all-time classic college football coach moment right there.
It's pretty bad. You know, just another reason why I hate college football. I'm sorry. I know I just like lost all of our fans, but I'm sorry.
No, it's because, I mean, the guy, not only has he not won a playoff game at Notre Dame, so he was making millions there to just not perform in the playoff at Notre Dame. And now he's just leaving to go to LSU and make even more money down there. And he's not going to take them anywhere, of course.
No, probably not.
Weird moment from Brian Kelly. Just had to be noted here. Very strange.
Yeah, indeed. I am excited, though, about somebody's chances in the NFL. I know I said I'm not talking NFL anymore, but I do want to talk about the Detroit Lions. Because they are still in this.
Let's do a quick little round of applause for them getting their first W.
They've won a game. They could not be the last pick in the draft now.
They could. They could actually string this together, Mike. I see a lot of momentum heading Detroit's way. They had a close call on Thanksgiving. They finally get it done now. They literally won at the buzzer. It was a cool finish to see. Shout out to the Lions for getting off the schneid there.
Jared Goff transforming that team one game at a time.
Yes, he is. He's transforming them to something. I don't know what, but he's transforming them. Yeah.
You don't know what. Another sport that seems to be transforming before our eyes is baseball. They're in a lockout. That means that absolutely nothing is happening in any way, shape, or form because the owners all lock the doors and kind of wave to the players.
That's kind of like exactly what happens between pitches in a baseball game. Absolutely nothing. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So whatever. We'll see what happens.
Let's shout out our alma mater real quick because I saw a good little poll for our Quinnipiac Bobcats. Mike, give us the hockey update.
Number two in the nation. They hate us, so we're not number one, but we should be. But we are number two hockey team in the nation.
No, have we had that number one poll distinction at any moment?
I believe we have, yes.
Yeah, several years ago, there was a moment in the sun there. It would be nice to grab it one more time. You know, it doesn't mean anything until March or April, but it's nice to have now.
It's true. We usually do really well early in the season, and we do just fine in the second half of the season as well. We usually have our highest rankings earlier in the season like we do now.
Cheers to our Bobcats and Quinnipiac alma maters and alum out there. And we'll have some Quinnipiac content coming soon to the podcast as well.
Can't wait. But for now, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Bites, introducing you to the perfect golf snack. It's great on the go. It's healthy. It's the great post-workout snack you need. Gym bag, car, ready to go wherever you need them. Promo code COL20 for 20% off or head to toasty.com/COL. I'm recapping a great dinner because I'm doing these, you know, weekend holiday season dinners. I feel like these are good. This is a good 3-4 week stretch as we get into the holidays to really go for it on the weekend dinner. You know, a lot of people are tuckered in. So I went for my mom's classic baked stuffed shrimp recipe. And oh boy, was it a hit. It turned out beautifully.
Mouth is watering. I don't even know what they look like or what's in it, but my mouth is watering. Just
honestly, not the most photogenic. So they didn't make Always End with Food Pod on Instagram. But I'll tell you, the recipe is mind-numbingly simple. All you do is you do something really fun, which is you take an entire sleeve of Ritz crackers. And you just smash them with your hands and you crumple them up. You throw some lemon, garlic, melted butter in there and that's your coating. You throw them on as many shrimp as you want in the oven, 350, 20 minutes, done. It's a great, easy recipe. Highly recommend anyone out there. Amateur cooks, you can get that done right there. I just listed every ingredient in the dish. It's great.
Love it. Love it. I did a lot of frying of things this past week because it was Hanukkah.
That's right.
The Festival of Lights. And what Jewish people typically do this time of year is fry food. So it felt like I was in the South, which I am. So.
Oh, are you adopting an accent like our friend Brian Kelly? Or
if I try to do an accent, my wife might divorce me.
So stick to just frying food then in that case.
Not allowed to do a Southern accent. No, but we did latkes. It was raining latkes. And we did sufganiyot.
Which are officially what?
Jelly donuts.
That's right. They are. They look great too. I enjoyed what looked to be the texture of the donut. Nice job with the filling.
Yeah. They were actually, we used a recipe from King Arthur Flour. It actually calls for them to be made with a pâte à choux dough instead of a raised yeast dough. So we've never done anything with a pâte à choux. So in case you don't remember what that is, Alex, in case you're forgetting all your baking competitions.
Yes. School us.
Your pâte à choux is when you take your butter and water and salt and you boil it, and then you add your flour into the pot and you stir it all together. You let it cool for a little while, and then you add your eggs.
And so a reminder that Michael loves King Arthur Flour. So King Arthur Flour, if you're listening out there and you'd love to see more content from Michael in his kitchen with King Arthur Flour, you just let us know and we'll be glad to accompany. Yeah.
Look, we're all from New England here. And we love New England. And so we know King Arthur's from New England, and that's another reason to love them. I'm sorry, rest of America, but New England. And you know, King Arthur, I'm going to toot your own horn some more. You're owned by your employees, which I love that. You're not a giant conglomerate.
Oh, that's like cool. Nice little food fact there. Love that. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. The more you know. Hashtag always end with food there. Thank you for tuning into Course of Life. We'll see everyone next week.